everyone. It's former WWE host Lillian Garcia. Let me ask you a question. Do you ever wonder how your favorite stars make it to the big time? Then come check out my new show, Chasing Glory, with Lillian Garcia on podcastone.com. Hear me chat with some of your favorite athletes and entertainers about their rise to the top. It's about to get real, raw, and inspiring. So join me for new episodes every Monday on podcastone.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
And welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Don't forget those swinging sounds, right? Chris Maxpata happens to be standing next to me here. Volumes 1, 2, and 3. Someday 4. Someday, Chris. Someday. Someday, yeah. Also, remember to check drdrew.com. Support the people that support us, and we appreciate it. We carefully select these people, and we make sure they're worthy of being a part of this whole operation. But it helps keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla pirate ship. Also, don't forget Weekly Infusion, me and Dr. Spaz doing sort of more medically based stuff, and then me and Bob Forrest and Mike Catherwood doing This Life. Some of that is also at Dr. Drew Facebook page. You can actually watch me with Amber, us with Amber Portwood, us with Andy Dick, various other let's see, who else we've had in there. Been very interesting podcasts we've had, and we hope you'll support them. And go take a look, sign up for them, bookmark them. We really need your support. Tell a friend. We appreciate it. And we're going to go to calls today. We're going to just listen to some calls. We will let's just talk to Mark. Go ahead there, Mark. Mark?
Uh-oh. Hey, Dr. Drew. How are you?
Good, man. What's happening? You're 50. What's up?
I'm 50 years old. Got a question for you.
Yeah.
So I've had a generalized anxiety disorder my whole life, and I've been doing a lot of Lexapro and a lot of yoga and a lot of different stuff just to maintain it. But in the past 3 years, it seems like that generalized anxiety disorder has completely gotten out of control where medication, exercise, breath techniques, like nothing's really, you know, been able to address it. So I'm kind of giving up on the traditional psychology and psychiatry of taking medication. Do you see any trends in generalized anxiety disorder where a 50-year-old guy who's fairly successful, who's fairly, you know, got it together, every day seems a little bit worse and a little bit more tense where you get electricity going through your body and you seriously need some mental health? Any other recommendations
yeah,
for me?
As we get older, people get well, I was laughing because what I've heard is people laugh, you know, sort of joking, call it spilkas. They get your brain changes as you get older, and so it gets – I always think of it as it's sort of – processing power gets less, and some people get more anxiety in response to that. This may be some of that, but it also occurs to me, have you ever been – did you come through trauma in childhood?
I don't think so.
Because I always worry that generalized anxiety is really just some sort of post-traumatic stress reaction. And it's very common that I have noticed two phenomena that have been relatively under-addressed. One is generalized anxiety that's really more of a presentation of a post-traumatic stress disorder that has been improperly or not adequately treated, and or some sort of the order of what we call alexithymia, that there's a disconnection between you and your feeling states. Your primary feelings are sort of off in the distance and hard to connect to. And people that aren't connected to their feelings often only feel anxiety. Have you ever had any kind of either trauma therapy or emotionally focused therapy?
Not at all. I mean, I've been trying to diagnose with bipolar, you know, anxiety, some type of depression, maybe even some ADHD. But nothing ever that deep. In fact, you know, I'm just looking for something new.
Well, I would go.
I would
talk to a therapist that has experience in dealing with trauma, and I think things on the order of emotionally focused therapy and certainly kinds of trauma therapies might really help. Now, there are people that specialize in anxiety disorders that use a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy, but I'm thinking sort of outside the box because you're asking for sort of a new approach. And that's something that I've seen happen where people are carried along as other things, and really it's kind of it's an adverse childhood experience with some sort of low-grade post-traumatic stress disorder. So I would strongly urge you to find a therapist that has some trauma experience and get who's good and does really careful, thoughtful therapy, somebody with a PhD after their name or a PsyD, LCSW, somebody with a lot of training, and see if there isn't something there. I mean, why not get an evaluation and just get it checked out? Thanks, Mark. I got to keep moving here. This is an interesting call from John. John, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for calling. This is interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, I called in today because, as you know, there's been a tremendous amount of debate about the potential implications of the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, the show's makers have said it starts a conversation and will hopefully help some people, and undoubtedly that was their intention. But on the other, you know, there's been experts in the community pointing out that the show violates medical guidelines on how to present suicide. And so with that, this week we released a study where we brought data to bear, and we looked at internet searches around the time the series was released, and what we found was very troubling. Yes, there was some increase in people searching for prevention and awareness, but searches for things like how to commit suicide or painless suicide or other methods on how to kill oneself increased 19, 23, even sometimes 29%. And so I want to get your reaction to our study, which I'm sure you've seen in the news, and have a conversation with you that can maybe help some people since
It's great.
You're connected to Hollywood in some way.
No, let's do it. I'm excited that you called. I saw the headlines. I've not read the study, but I, you know, you've sort of sketched out what the content is of the study. You said this just so I understand, this variation in the incidence of this increase in, I guess it was Google searches. Is that by region? Is that why there was this variability?
We looked at the United States, and we did that because, you know, of course, many events are happening across the world. So we want to be sure the effect wasn't contaminated.
Yeah.
And we looked at the United States for 19 days following the release of the series. And over those 19 days, suicide searches in general spiked. But also, we looked at how the specific content changed, because you can see when somebody searches for how to commit suicide, they're obviously just one step away from a suicide act.
Typically. Were you able to make any contact with any of the kids that were doing the searches?
No, yeah. We didn't. But something else happened that has never happened to me before in my entire career, and that is family members of suicide victims and suicide survivors have written to me and expressed that 13 Reasons Why was a trigger that caused their son or daughter to go over the edge. And it's been very shocking to me to hear that story, because often we think of data as being abstract, to see the real-world effect of what that data means.
Again, I want to go back to you. You mentioned five different percentages. Why was each on a different day or each in a different region?
Well, we looked at specific queries. So like this, for example, in our study, like this specific query, how to commit suicide, you know, had an increase of, let's see, let me get the exact number. How to commit suicide increased 26% above what you would expect. How to kill yourself is up 9% above what you would expect.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about where this series went wrong. What would you have liked to have seen them done?
Well, the problem with the series is, as you know, and your listeners may not, is it glamorizes suicide in a way where it presents it as an only option to people who may view the show. I mean, the show is not going to cause someone without a mental illness who's not suicidal to commit suicide, but someone who's already on the edge, it could be a final trigger, a final motivator for their action.
Well,
particularly when they show the suicide act in the finale, or say the suicide victim had no other choice.
See, I was concerned that it reinforced the adolescent fantasy of suicide. And it's interesting we're having this conversation. The day in which we're recording this, Michelle Carter was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for texting coercively to get her boyfriend to commit suicide. And if you read her text, they're filled with all this. What if an adult were texting, you go, oh my God, this person disconnected from reality. But the way adolescents thinks about suicide, it's just the way many of them do, which is you'll be in heaven, you'll be free of pain, you'll be looking down on everybody and all the effects you've had. And that's the way adolescents think about suicide. And this whole thing of leaving tapes behind that then create this whole narrative, it really reinforces the romantic fantasy that an adolescent would have about suicide. That's what I was concerned about. Did you share that?
I certainly agree with you. I agree with your thinking. As someone who watched the entire series as part of the study, you know, to understand the context here, the person had an outsized effect in death, bigger than they could in life.
And as a viewer, she was alive. You know, you were thinking this. You know, we had the experience of the girl that allegedly committed suicide is narrating what's going on. You're hearing her tapes, and she's essentially the narrator for the whole thing. And it's as though she is alive, which is precisely the way an adolescent thinks about their suicide. And that's what concerned me. It reinforced the adolescent fantasy of suicide. And I think the fact that people are talking about suicide and that, you know, families may have watched this together. Yes. Good. But boy, there was a piece of this that got everyone rattled. I'm not sure anyone can fully articulate what it really was about this thing that got everyone so stirred up. So my guess is that it's the fantasy piece, but there may be other things as well. What do you guess, John?
Well, like I said, showing the suicide act and also, you know, showing that people can't get help. You know, twice in the series, the fictional suicide victim sought out help from providers, at her local school, and they denied that. You know, we're sending all the wrong messages with 13 Reasons Why, and I'm not to say that, you know, Hollywood should shut up and leave it to the experts, because I do believe you can have a narrative that impacts suicide or suicidal thinking persons in a positive way.
Yeah.
And that is to tell a story they need to hear, and that's a success story. You know, where someone's on the edge, gets help, comes back from the edge, has a long, full life, and that's a far more common story than a narrative on 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah. There's something called the IEC, the Entertainment Industry Council, that has tons of resources for writers. People like yourself, I mean, should get involved with it. That really will go out and help writers shape these stories in such a way that you know, the need of capturing the eyes is met, but also the best possible impact can be had with these really impactful cultural events we call television.
Well, my team has done a lot of work on that. You know, we showed that Charlie Sheen, by disclosing his HIV status, calls at-home HIV testing set HIV. At-home testing kits to reach an all-time high, you know, a record high.
Crazy.
So it's possible to have a positive impact. But this is clearly a negative impact, and I guess as someone who's calling out to be asking the questions that doing the talking, I'll ask you, what can we do now that we have these strong beliefs that could have a negative impact, now we have some evidence that it's having this negative impact, what do we do? What's Netflix's responsibility here, and how should they act?
Well, the only thing they can do, I mean, they're a media company. All they could really do is maybe put out another series that, you know, but it would have to be as successful as this. You understand? And that's the conundrum, is how do you get people to watch and talk and it become a cultural phenomenon and have the right messaging you want? It's lightning in a bottle, unfortunately. I'm sure that people there would I mean, if you reached out to them, I'm sure they'd be happy to sort of create a dialogue about this. I it seemed to me. I would go to the Entertainment Industry Council and start there. Go to the IEC. Go on their website and send them an email. I'll give you my information too, and I can sort of maybe help you navigate through this stuff. I was just thinking about the Teen Mom stuff, for instance. I was involved with it was an NBC News special where they took kids and they had them live with somebody else's infant for a week. And the idea was to show kids how impossible, you know, teen pregnancy is and how difficult it is. And the academic world freaked out. They were like, oh my God, there are so many pregnant teenagers in the world. Why don't you just put your cameras in the teenagers' lives and document what happened? Well, that's what 16 and Pregnant and Teen Mom is. People are freaking out more about that than they were about I forget what the series was. It was years ago. I can't remember what it's called. But by the same token, it looks as though Teen Mom has had a significantly beneficial effect on teen pregnancy in this country. So it's very hard to predict what television is going to do. You understand what I mean, John?
Yeah, I get it's hard to predict. But in this particular case, I mean, wouldn't you say it's reckless given the narrative that was used around 13 Reasons Why? I know what we've been calling for in the media. We've been calling for Netflix to take the series down, the first stream and it's currently airing, because undoubtedly people are going to hear us talking now, people are reading them in news, and they're going to watch the series, and I'd hate for that to be a trigger.
Yeah.
You know, we have to fix the content here. The problem is, you know, there's so many holes in this Swiss cheese. It's like, where do you start when it comes to trying to fix it?
Could they, first of all, one of the things, don't let your kids watch it alone. If they're going to watch it, you watch it with them. That's my number one recommendation. Do you think there's some sort of disclaimer they could put in there? People will probably fast forward through it, but, or maybe, you know, a commentary at the beginning of the series by somebody that could have any impact?
Well, they did do that when there was this rhetorical debate going on back in May, a month after the series. And I do, you know, listen, I get their business. They want to generate revenue. They don't want to remove content. But my reaction to that is it a fair response to create a safety net when you're potentially the ones pushing people over the edge?
I don't think so. Well, it's something. They should do something. I just don't know. I don't know what.
I mean, I can just tell you, when I get emails from family members where they say, my daughter killed herself, and I went back and I found that she binge-watched 13 Reasons Why, that's shocking, you know, to put the numbers in the context of an actual victim and a family wrecked.
No, it's terrible. And I've heard from other practitioners that deal with adolescents on a daily basis that have been very, very, very concerned about this. So it's not as you say, it's not just a theoretical or an abstract concern. It's now borne out in the data, and people are reporting this out in their practices. And the question is, what should the response be? And I don't know. I don't know what you can – I mean, if they would take it down, great. Yeah, if they would take it down, I don't know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. I mean, and that's – I mean, I know what I did for me, and maybe some of your listeners might do the same, and that is I decided I didn't want to be a Netflix subscriber. I didn't want to finance the creation of content that could harm people and wreck families and ruin lives. And maybe others might decide that watching House of Cards isn't worth it. So maybe they should cancel their subscription.
We got to think of a very – things have got to be very creative to respond to stuff like this. Well, listen, are you guys doing any further study?
Not on this particular issue. You know, we mainly focus on rapid response. We've done some things on mental health that's coming out soon in the future. But on this, we wanted to bring data to bear because, you know, the debate wasn't getting anywhere. And, you know, now that we have data, maybe we can get a response that helps people, because I'm sure that's what everybody really wants.
I believe Netflix wants that too. The question is, what are they willing to do and what can they do? And then I don't know. But I will see who I can chat with and see what their response is. But Gary, get me John's contact information. I'd love to stay in touch with him, if that's okay.
Sure thing. Okay. John, just hang on the line.
What you said you were working on rapid response and mental health. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, as you know, the problem with healthcare research in general is we often are talking about things from 1988 when it's 2017.
Right.
And so we use free big media data, like what you search for, what you post on social media, to understand what people are thinking now, to identify those needs so we can respond. Because, you know, events like 13 Reasons Why are happening all the time across mental health and health in general. We need to be aware of those so we can help people. I mean, your show is a forum for people to come out about what they're needing now and get help.
Yeah.
We can do that on a grand scale.
What's got your attention right now?
Well, in general, the 13 Reasons Why is our main focus currently. Well, our other issue that I think we want to help with is try to make sure that people understand the harms and warnings. You know, harms and warnings are often abstract. You know, we often yell fire too often and people ignore us.
Yeah.
So we're doing a series of work on that.
God, these days everyone's hair on fire all the time, so it's hard to know what to listen to.
Yeah. And that's a really big problem in public health, because everybody has their pet issue.
Yeah.
And so you hear this cacophony of voices and you don't know how to respond. And so hopefully we can fix that. I think, you know, we've had success in the past. We talked about Pokemon Go, how it caused distracted driving, and the makers of that game actually put in restrictions to make the game safer, so you couldn't play it at some driving speed.
Yeah,
so
these people, the track record,
you have an impact.
I don't believe any of these people that create these in games or products have any sinister intent. They want to do good. It's like they're like to people like you and me. But
it is true. But the issue, I'll say this, and it's a narrative you talk about time and time again, and that is people's good intentions are often based on their personal experiences, and our personal experiences don't translate very well to the population. That's why we need to take into account scientists and talk to experts in the community and engage on learning before we present content like 13 Reasons Why.
There you go. I completely agree with you. John, I hope to speak to you in the future. Thank you so much. Maybe I'll have you in here and do a whole pod on, we'll figure out some topics and do it, okay?
Okay, cool.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Blinds Galore Labor Day sale starts Wednesday, August 30th, and that is when you'll get up to 50% off everything. Now, if you've worked hard all summer, do reward yourself with the best custom window coverings from Blinds Galore during one of their biggest sales of the year. And, of course, Blinds Galore is our friend. I am a customer. I have met with their administrators. They are responsive. I'm telling you, they make it easy, and the quality is excellent. They've covered over 2 million windows, and that's what they do, and they do it better than anybody. You'll save a ton compared to the big box stores, and you will get the custom product made just for your windows that you've selected. They'll work with your designer if you have one. They have their own designers to offer from start to finish, measuring, picking out the perfect window covering, installing it. If there's a mistake, they'll take over for you and make sure things are done right to your specification. They even offer free shipping and will send you up to 15 free samples right to your door, all for free. You can do it everything from home. You work hard enough. Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the custom blinds you've always wanted in your home. Check out blindsgalore.com during their big Labor Day sale. It starts on August 30th, and let them know I sent you. It's Dr. Drew. That is blindsgalore.com. BetterHelp offers online licensed professional counselors. They allow you to connect with a licensed counselor in a safe, private environment via text, chat, phone, or video for a flat monthly fee. That way, hopefully, you can get help where you are. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. There are no waiting lists, and you'll be communicating within 24 hours. Best of all, it is affordable. Pricing starts as low as $35 a week. That means a month of online therapy costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. And for our listeners, ages 18 and up, BetterHelp is offering 7 days of free counseling so you can get it and experience it and see what it's like. Just go to betterhelp.com/podcast and fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and match you to a counselor. That is betterhelp.com/podcast to get started today. I have no direct experience with these counselors. However, they are licensed and they have served clients in 17 languages. And the therapists in BetterHelp's network average 13 years of experience. It's secure, confidential, and you can cancel within 7 days for no charge. Again, that is betterhelp.com/podcast.
Well, I'm sure you've heard me spouting off about Hydralyte. I've been recommending it to everybody, and the feedback, though, has been unanimous. This stuff works. It is a great product. It's exactly what I had conceived of, and they delivered it. And it's, of course, great when you're sick and severely dehydrated, but it's perfect for everyday use. My wife uses it every day, especially now that it's getting hot outside. So whether you're exercising or dealing with seasonal allergies, say, staying properly hydrated can help relieve headaches, reduce fatigue, and keep you feeling healthy. And once you've started getting dehydrated, it's already too late for a water or sports drink. They don't have the ability to rapidly rehydrate you because it requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing provides this like Hydralyte. Their formulation is based on established, proven science. It's quite simply the best rehydration product out there. Comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, available as a pre-mixed drink and a powder, or my preference, the fizzy effervescent tablets. You simply drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water, and you got it right there. I mean, it's just a great product. And compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. The solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. So find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com or DrDrew.com. And for more information, visit Hydralyte, H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydralyte.com. You won't be sorry.
This is maybe on this topic we can get into this. Maybe that will have some impact. Frank, go right ahead.
Hey, Dr. Drew, how are you doing?
Good, Frank. What's happening?
Hey, you know, I caught you briefly this morning on earlier this morning on Kevin and Dean about talking about, you know, quitting alcohol cold turkey if you drink quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, unfortunately, I had to get out of my vehicle several times. I missed quite a bit.
Okay.
And I am in that kind of situation where I drink daily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not, I wouldn't consider it heavily, but maybe a couple, 3 whiskey drinks per evening. But that does kind of frighten me if I do decide to quit.
All right. So let me tell you what I said. What I was talking about, some other listeners that didn't hear this, I was talking about the fact that alcohol, withdrawal is potentially fatal. It's the only drug of withdrawal that can kill you by just purely from the withdrawal. Heroin withdrawal doesn't kill you. Cocaine doesn't kill you. You can have a heart attack during opiate withdrawal. It can be pretty miserable in opiate withdrawal, but the withdrawal itself does not kill you. Alcohol can. Everyone is aware of sort of the shakes and the vomiting and that kind of stuff. That's a sign of bad alcohol withdrawal, but it can devolve into true delirium tremens, which is cardiovascular collapse. It's a fatal process. It's usually associated with other medical problems like a pneumonia or an urine infection or something. That's what sort of sends you over the waterfall into true DTs. And some people argue that if you survived, you weren't even in DTs. True DTs is a very dangerous process. And it's treated with Valium and Librium and drugs, these sort of counter-addictive substances, counter-dependent substances. And our treatment is quite good, but it has to be done carefully and has to be monitored by a nurse. People also use anti-seizure, stabilizing medicine, that sort of thing. We have it perfected. We can get people through alcohol withdrawal without a lot of complication, provided that we get our hands on you before it goes out of control. Once it's out of control, it's out of control. And Bean asked a very astute question. He said, well, who are the ones that really need the medical attention? How do you know if you're someone that can be in big trouble? And that's, Frank, kind of what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that the people that are likely to be in trouble, you are still somebody that could have seizure for up to 2 weeks after you stop. That does happen. So you got to be careful driving, even at your level of drinking, though not likely. But the people that really need medical attention, a good sign that you are in trouble is if you have shakes in the morning and you drink to suppress the shakes in the morning. That's a sign that you need to get some medical evaluation. Okay.
Well, I'm not quite at that point. I mean, hopefully I never reach that point. But at the same time, prior to this past month, I actually kind of cut it down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I was drinking maybe a bottle or maybe three quarters of a bottle of Jack a night.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
That is quite a bit. And I feel it physically.
Yeah.
And but then I quit cold turkey for about a week and a half. And cut out sugar as well to do a crash diet, and I felt fine. I actually felt a lot better.
Yeah, there are plenty of people that are very heavy drinkers that have almost no withdrawal. I've seen that too. So it doesn't mean because you're a heavy drinker you're necessarily going to have severe withdrawal. But I can tell you, you're an alcoholic, and you're going to go back. You're gonna go back where you left off.
Well, I don't do the morning drinking. I carry on a full Monday through Friday job. I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
No, it's all right. I'm just saying. Eventually, you're gonna have to do something about this. Eventually, you're gonna have to take care of it. And as long as it's working for you, it's pretty hard to convince somebody to do something if you're making a go of it, because the work is hard. It's hard to get sober, and and you don't want to. And I understand. But when it's time, you're going to have to really be serious about it and do the whole, get the program and do all that good stuff, because it's not going to be easy. As you see, it always kind of drifts back. And one of the markers for alcoholism is relative resistance to intoxication. And anybody that can drink three quarters of a bottle of Jack a day, that you're pretty good. You're pretty resistant to intoxication. I'd be in a coma.
Oh, yes. But, I've been practicing for quite a while.
I guess. You might want to talk to your doctor about some vitamin replacement, some magnesium, and check your liver, because
I don't know if it contributes or discontributes, but I'm also a vegetarian. I try to take care of my eating habits and take care of my body. But
that is literally rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Well, I mean, I've been doing that for 20 years. I've only been heavily drinking for 5-6 years.
Rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Seriously.
I understand.
All right. It's all right.
But, I mean, is there a proper way to go through without treatment and kind of I did catch you're not a big fan of weaning process.
Yeah, it doesn't work, because you'll just go back up again. You'll wean down, you'll wean up, and that's okay. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying you're not really gonna start your process that way. It just people don't sort of complete the weaning. They just sort of cut. That's just like you're cut down to three drinks a day. That's kind of how it ends up. And okay, it's better than not, right? I'm doing a philosophy podcast I was doing the other day, and this is where I become philosophical. Who am I to say? It's your life. You're living it. And I know how hard it is to get sober and how it, a big task that is. And you have to really be motivated. And if you're not motivated, who am I to say? Unless you're really hurting yourself. Then as a physician, we gotta kind of step up a little bit. And, you know, you may really be hurting your liver. You may really have some trouble there. But who knows? I don't know.
Probably about two years ago. Maybe, you know, actually, I'm sorry. It was roughly about 4 years ago. I did get admitted to the hospital for pancreatitis.
Oh, well, okay. And that, and alcoholic pancreatitis can be fatal by itself. It can get, if it recurs.
I mean, at the point I was recovering from a rotator cuff surgery, I was kind of, you know, taking a little more pain medication than I needed. I completely cut it. I don't even take aspirin. I don't, you know, I don't need any pills.
That's alcoholic pancreatitis. That's what causes the pancreatitis.
It's not
alcohol. Yeah, that's straight up. And that recurs, tends to recur. And God help you if you get chronic pancreatitis. That's a miserable condition. But even the acute pancreatitis can kill you. You know, it can be quite dangerous. So, you know, we will see. What got you escalating your alcohol consumption? Anything?
Really, nothing in particular. I mean, I used to partake in marijuana quite a bit on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And for job purposes, drug tests.
Ah, you switched
completely
over.
Completely eliminated.
Got it.
But, I mean, I also drank prior,
yeah.
But not to the extent.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a common thing when people cross over, you know, they stop one substance and flip over the other, and the other's got to replace it, and you got to kind of step it up a little bit to get to the same level. All right, Frank, good luck. Call me again if you have any questions. We're happy you're asking questions, and I'm happy you're thinking about this stuff. Ty, what's going on?
Hi, how are you?
Good, what's up?
Well, my question is, I've been with my boyfriend going on 10 years, August 16th,
mm-hmm.
and he hasn't proposed. So I just want to know, like, what's your insight of, you know, man or doctor?
How old is he?
He's 33.
Have you talked to him about this?
I have, but, like, I don't know if he jokes, because he tells me all the time, it's like, you know, one day I'm going to propose to you, and I go, yeah, I'll have to see if you believe it. You know, like, I really don't think you're going to propose.
Well,
you know, because
here's the biggest problem. Do you want to have kids? Ty? Did I lose her?
Looks like she's still there. Ty?
Yeah. Hello?
There we are. Do you want to have kids?
We have one boy.
Oh, you guys have kids together already, and he doesn't want to get married? What's the matter with him? Does he want to form a family?
I don't know. I mean, everybody that we've known has gotten married, and I joke around, and I don't know if it's a jinx because, you know,
Are you joking? Why don't you get serious? It's serious.
I don't know. I just...
Well, it has to be that you figure if you push him, he's going to say no and bolt. That must be the reason. Otherwise, you would be asking for something reasonable. We've been together 10 years. We have a kid. Let's form a family. Let's go. You only have a few more years of reproductive potential ahead. A couple more years,
yeah.
You know, really. And if you want to have another kid, that you better get on that soon. And you want the stability of a family unit to raise these children. The hell's the matter with you? It should be a specific question to him.
Yeah.
I think you fear he's going to take off if you put the heat on. And if he's going to take off because of that, he's going to take off anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I kind of have that fear. And that's why I throw that joke in there, because I don't know if I jinx it, but everybody that we've met, like our cousin, she just got back with her boyfriend, and he gave her a promise ring. So I joke with her, and I go, oh, you're going to get married before me. And every time I say that, someone gets married. So I go, you know, my time and my luck has run dry, you know, joking around. But I don't know. I don't know if he takes it serious, so that's why I joke with him. But like you said, I guess it's that fear.
But this is not a joking matter. This is your life. This is your family. This is serious business. There should be no joke here. It's not like you haven't put in the time with this guy. And the fact that you don't know where you stand, that is shocking to me. You should at least know where you stand. At least. I mean, he's going to do what – I'm not saying he has to do fill in the blank. He can do as he pleases. But for you to want to form a stable family unit on behalf of your children, maybe have more children, that's reasonable. Yeah. That's reasonable. Those are your desires. They're valid. And he's not even – forget he's not being respectful of those desires. He's not even acknowledging you have them. You don't even know what's going on. Come on. Come on. Get some, here's what you got to do. Get some. get a close friend. Get some support. Talk to her. It should be another female. Get somebody in your corner, a coach who can be there and you can return to and refuel, like just like you would a coach, like Rocky had Burgess Meredith there in the corner. You need that person in your corner. And if it can't be a friend, a therapist if you want, but a friend will be fine. And go in and you don't have to be pugilistic about it. You don't have to fight, but you need to be direct. And no joking. It's not funny. Thanks, Ty. Let me know how that turns out.
When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. A lot of times that is not the case. People configure cars online only later to find out they are not available. Not with TrueCar. Of course, I'm talking about TrueCar. You get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Yeah, you know, and we talk about all the time, using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Next, TrueCar, TrueCar.com or TrueCar app will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 3,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers are available nationwide. You will get to work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer that you make contact with, and TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster, better buying experience when they contact a TrueCar Certified Dealer. And on average, you can expect to save over $3,000 off MSRP. Once you register, you'll see a real price on actual inventory. Hook up with that TrueCar certified dealer. Have a better buying experience. TrueCar, go to the TrueCar.com or TrueCar app. Do what I'm telling you.
One of the really exciting parts of working in recovery is not just seeing patients get well, but seeing them get, well, amazing and actually go off and become mental health professionals themselves. The field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners has never been greater. So if you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've known Alliant University for years now. I'm proud to have spoken at their events in the past. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 individuals working worldwide, and it's fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, and clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Their faculty is made up of industry leaders, and former faculty names include the likes of Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. So for more information on the School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on my site or visit alliant.edu. That is alliant.edu.
Jennifer. Jennifer, what's up? Jennifer, laughing with her boyfriend?
Shit.
Jennifer. Why don't you rescreen that call, see what's going on there. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey there. How are you doing?
Good. Jeff, what's up?
My son is 30. At 12, he had a germinoma and had whole brain, whole spine radiation.
Okay.
And then he had a cavernoma. It was actually deployed with the 82nd Airborne and had a stroke from this cavernoma.
Wait, hold on a second. He was doing what with the 82nd Airborne?
Well, he was deployed in Afghanistan and started bleeding from the cavernoma.
Right, and a cavernoma is sort of a blood vessel, you know, a group of blood vessels in the brain. Do you know where in the brain?
It was in the left frontal lobe.
Did he know he had that? Did he know it was there?
No, he did not. No.
And you said there was a germinoma there that they radiated successfully?
There was a germinoma when he was 12 in the pineal region.
Okay.
And they did whole brain, whole spine radiation.
Okay. So what Jeff is telling us is that he had a germ cell tumor, these are called, which are, you know, things related to your reproductive cells. And it's, and it was right in the very, very, very middle of the brain by the pineal gland. And things in that area can drop down into the spinal cord because there's a hole through the middle of your spinal cord that tumors can drop down into. So they had to radiate all of his brain and all of his spinal cord. Sounds like that was successful. My suspicion is that this venous – or is it venous or arterial hemangioma, whatever he's got?
I do not know.
Okay. So he's got a tangle of blood vessels. I'm going to guess that's from the radiation. Is that, did they say
that? They say that, yeah, that it's damaged from the radiation. Yeah. It just didn't show up in MRIs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. So that makes sense. And what? Okay. And what's your question?
So now they're saying that they need to do something with the cavernoma, and he's also got a benign tumor beside it. And I wish I could tell you the name of the benign tumor, and it skips me now. Like a they're trying to determine.
Is it a meningioma?
Yes.
Okay. Meningiomas come off of the skull, essentially. And those are benign, and, you know, you have to take those out too because they cause a lot of pressure on the brain. But that's a relatively minor thing. But the blood vessel thing sounds like a bigger deal to me. So go ahead.
Well, they say it can bleed again, so they want to do something with it.
Yes.
And they're saying that it's in a fold that is next to an area that would be, if there was any issue with that, it could damage his sensory, like his hand movements and that type of thing.
Sure.
So they're trying to determine, do we go in and take a part of the skull away and remove both of them in that procedure, or do we do a gamma knife?
What about,
and they're hesitant about...
Okay, what about they have another procedure they can do. They can actually go in and sclerose the vessels. They can actually go in through the into the arteries up into the brain. UCLA has a big department like this. Now, I don't know what the, if this is that kind of a blood vessel collection that it would be amenable to this sort of thing, but sometimes it can get up there and clot the whole thing off, essentially. Has anybody mentioned anything like that?
No.
Okay,
no.
So ask the about that. Ask about
two options,
a wire. Go ahead.
Okay.
Or a coil.
Well, the two options his neurosurgeon is giving him now is to remove a piece of the skull, go in and remove the cavernoma and the benign tumor, because the benign tumor could potentially grow and cause problems in the future, or do a gamma knife. And they're hesitant about a gamma knife because of the amount of radiation that he had with whole brain, whole spine radiation.
Okay, now you've just you've just exceeded my pay grade with that, because I don't know enough about gamma knife to know the impact of radiation. But go ahead, ask Jeff.
Yeah, well, we're just trying to determine what is the best procedure. I mean, obviously, when you're doing surgery on the brain, that's always scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Gamma knife is non-invasive and seems like it'd be a better option, but the neurosurgeon at this point is sort of thinking that doing more radiation might not be the best thing for him since he had so much.
I see what they're saying. Right. That makes sense to me. Is he at Emory?
He's actually going to, we're in Atlanta, and he's going to, brain tumor specialist, in Atlanta. So,
okay. Just make sure that there, you know, get as many opinions as you feel you need. And you know, Emory and that, all those, that tertiary referral system it happens to be really good. All the brain sciences are really good down there. So that's the good news. My instinct is to do something with that. Ask them if there's something they can do with that blood vessel collection to stabilize it before they take the meningioma out. The meningioma's got to go, it seems like. And I think the skull's got to be open for that. But is there something they can do first to decrease the risk of bleeding? Because the meningioma is going to be no big deal. Yeah, and if you saw that Maria Menounos just had that done. And it's a common thing. It's not that big a deal. But having the vessels next to it makes it a big deal and a different deal. So if there's any way they ask them, can you do something? Can we strategically do something to stabilize those vessels or really dramatically reduce the risk that they're going to complicate the meningioma procedure? That's what you want to do.
Okay.
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 All right.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Good luck,
my
friend.
Thank you so much.
Let me know what happens. You got it. Bye-bye.
All right. Will do. Thanks.
Let me try Jennifer again. Jennifer, you want to try this?
Fuck her.
Okay, well, that was that.
It sounds like there's some kind of a dispute going on.
Yes, they're fighting. Did you hear the fighting too?
Yeah, I did.
Fantastic. Jaden, what's going on? I've got weird connections here. Jaden? Oh, one more time. Jaden in Austin. I'm going to try to take this one. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Chloe.
Chloe?
Yes.
What's going on, Chloe?
Hi, I have a close relative that's a male, and he's transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get your advice about that.
Advice for him? For you? What are you asking for?
For me.
For you?
For me.
And he's transitioning to what?
No, it's my close relative is transitioning to a male to a female.
Okay. And is somebody you live with?
I've lived with before, yes.
And what are your concerns? What is it you need?
It's new to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to understand everything.
Right. That's good. Why don't you ask her? Why don't you ask her about it? Why don't you say, look, I don't understand this. I want to know what you help me help you, help me understand what this is like, and just ask lots of questions. Don't treat her as anything different than the person she always has been to you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do that?
Yes.
Why the hesitation?
It's just new to me. Like, I just feel like I was, like, wasn't aware of all of this.
How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay. So you've said three times you said it's new to me. I understand it's new to you. Why don't you go to her and say that? I've always, you know, whatever your feelings are, just be open and honest and straightforward. And you want to understand and you want to be supportive. If that's true, is that true?
It is true, yeah.
Yeah. So go read a lot online, educate yourself, read about what this experience is like, and then treat this person like the family member she has always been to you.
Okay, will do.
Okay. And if you have funny feelings about it, you can get your own therapist or you can talk to your friends about it. I understand it's new to you because you've said that and you're uncomfortable. But try to focus on the person and what she's going through and who she is to you and let her sort of explain it to you a little bit. Jaden, if anybody else, any other...
Hold on a second. I realized what the problem was. I transposed to the lines. So you were going to lines and calling the wrong name. So you have Jaden on 5 and Jennifer on 3.
Oh, so Jaden's the one with the big fight? Let me go to Austin. I mean, wait, which one? Jennifer.
Yes.
There you
are. I'm in New York.
There you are. We had the lines transposed. Go ahead. What's up?
I apologize to all of you guys.
I'm not sure if I'm going to go. Hang on a second. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to Jaden, though. That's the one that was having the huge blowout.
He seems ready to go now.
Maybe they were just confused because we were shouting the other name.
Yeah, but they were telling each other to F off. Have you heard all that?
I mean, that's good pod. You got to go to that.
All right. Jennifer, go ahead.
I have suffered from depression most of my life. And I've had some bad things happen recently.
What happened?
And I can't seem... My boyfriend broke up with me kind of out of the blue. I lost hours at work. My mom died.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just been rough. And I've been working with a cognitive behavioral therapist for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and I thought I was doing okay, and I can't stop the negative thoughts. It's like a nonstop from the minute I wake up till I fall asleep.
And by negative thoughts, are you thinking about hurting yourself?
No, just, you know, I keep thinking about the ex and, you know, what did I do wrong? Or
yeah.
I think about my mom and how I could have taken care of her better. I've made the wrong decisions about everything.
You know, one of the things about depression that people missed is there can be a lot of self-loathing and guilt and worthlessness and then negativity. Are you sleeping okay?
No, I have nightmares pretty much every night.
Have you thought about maybe some medication for a while to try to get through this?
I'm on 2 antidepressants, and I have – they gave me Xanax for the nightmares, but – both parents were drug addicts, so I don't.
Good.
I'm very fearful.
Yes, good. Appropriately. Is a psychiatrist prescribing these medications?
No, a general practitioner.
Okay, you need to see a psychiatrist for sure. If you're going to be on medications, have an expert prescribe them. And there's so many options these days. It's getting a little complicated for a general practitioner to be able to do this. It's one thing if he or she put you on a Lexapro and you felt better, fine. Or maybe even they added something else, you felt better, fine. You are suffering, and the degree to which you're suffering is unnecessary. You can get over this hump. You're trying to do ask your therapist if that's the right thing to do. I mean, that's the person that should be sort of helping make that decision, but. A general practitioner is really not in a position to do something like this. I will tell you what, I'm an internist, and I thought I understood psychiatric medication and psychiatry. Then I worked in a psychiatric hospital for 20 years, and then I realized as a general practitioner, we are woefully under-trained for being able to handle something like this. We can handle very simple stuff, but you've sort of failed that. So let's get an expert opinion, okay?
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Okay? Thank you.
You bet. Jennifer, thanks. And now, finally, Jaden, stop telling your girlfriend to F off.
Yes, sir. I get it on.
Get it on. Good. What's up?
Yes, sir. Long time, first time. I was calling because I am strongly considering getting a vasectomy, and I haven't ever heard you talk about it. Maybe you have.
Yeah.
But are there any side effects?
I mean,
you're aware of?
There can be. I mean, there can be chronic pain and inflammation and prostate inflammation, but really no significant side effects that are known. No. The most significant side effect people worry about is the failure of the vasectomy and fertility occurring. So you got to make sure.
Yeah.
You got to make sure.
Definitely don't want that.
Yeah, you got to make sure to get three sequential negative, zero sperm count testings done after the vasectomy. But infection, bleeding, the usual problems of surgery. There can be, people develop pain syndromes and things. Weird things can happen with any surgery, but it's a pretty good procedure. You're 33. Yeah, you're young. How many kids you have?
Oh, I don't have any. I'm trying to stay the course.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing is that a young person, a urologist might have some concern. You might want to store some semen just to be sure, if you decide to do this, just in case you think that this wasn't such a great idea someday. Make sense?
Yeah, well, I am 33, so at what point am I not,
gonna have
at what
kids?
Point am I not young anymore? And I mean, I'm pretty confident. I mean, I've always felt that I didn't want to have kids, and people would always tell me when I was in my teens, they'll be like, yeah, one day you do, or one day you will, and here I am, 33, going strong.
Are you married?
Still, no, I don't really plan on doing that either.
But that you might here's what can happen. What I've seen happen a lot, which is you fall in love with somebody, you get married. That person wants to have kids. It becomes very important to that person, and out of concern for that person's wishes, suddenly they're willing to have kids. So,
happens. Yeah. Well, if she's not willing to acknowledge the fact that overpopulation is an issue, then. She's probably not the right one after all.
All right.
You know what I mean?
We'll see. We'll see. I've seen that change many, many times, though. You'd be surprised. But it's your deal. So, yes, go proceed. All right. That does it. Thank you very much, everybody. Interesting. A lot of good calls today. And I want to hook up with John, maybe have another podcast with him. That'd be interesting. All that study down in San Diego. And I'll see you all next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or DrDrew.com.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack. and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.